This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Since 1995, Illinois' leading historic preservation nonprofit, Landmarks Illinois, has asked preservationists, community leaders, and citizens to nominate threatened or endangered historic properties for its annual list of Illinois' most endangered historic places. From the Century in Consumers Building in Chicago's Loop to Elks Lodge No. 64 in Rockford, this year's list encompasses a variety of properties that are rundown, vacant, facing demolition, or major redevelopment. With us to talk more about the places that made this year's list is Quinn Adamowski, Regional Advocacy Manager at Landmarks Illinois. He covers Illinois basically outside Chicagoland. Quinn, welcome to the 21st show. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And a little later in the conversation, we're also going to bring in two people who are working to preserve a couple of the properties that are on this year's list. But listeners, we want to hear from you as well, especially if there's a property in Illinois you care about that's facing demolition, or maybe it's just desperately in need of some preservation work. 800-222-9455. What questions do you have for our guests about the historic preservation work in Illinois? Join the conversation at 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455, or tweet us at 21st Show. So Quinn, I want to talk about this list. Can you talk about a little bit about its history? As I mentioned, it's been about 30 years. You know, what qualifies a place as endangered?
Well, first, let me start just by giving a little background on our organization. We are a statewide nonprofit that is an advocacy organization for historic resources, for historic preservation. And from that came the idea of the list, that there are these wonderful properties throughout the state that have been abandoned or are in a deteriorated state, and that our organization decided to take the lead and advocate for them. And so the list has been around since 1995, and there's been hundreds of properties listed. And, you know, the idea here is we have local advocates within communities throughout the state who've identified important historic structures that there seemingly is not an answer for. And those local advocates then reach out to us with a nomination, and they say, hey, here's this wonderful property. We've been trying for years, sometimes decades, to try to find a solution for it. We need help. We need to highlight this building and make it known that it's in need of assistance, it's in need of a developer, it's in need of people coming to its rescue. And so that's a lot of what the purpose of the program is to highlight these super important structures throughout the state that for one reason or another have not had the care that they've needed.
What's the track record? What's been accomplished? I mean, are there properties that stand out in your mind that maybe the bulldozer was stopped, another use was found?
Yeah, that happens quite frequently. I will actually just highlight a few. So I'm from Joliet, Illinois, and my personal preservation project is the old Joliet Prison. And that was listed on the most endangered list in 2002. And in 2018, the city and the Joliet Area Historical Museum entered into a partnership. And now that is on its way to being a tourist attraction. So that's my personal most endangered story, right? I've had the opportunity recently to meet with a group in Peoria that was focused on the Madison Theater, a very historic structure there in Peoria. And that was on the list in 2015. And now they have ownership of it, and they're building a capital stack, and restoration for that site is on its way starting this summer. Another property is the old Marine Hospital in Galena that's been sitting vacant for decades. And that was on the most endangered list in 2014. And now it's a local landmark. And there's a developer who's looking to build a large development around the Marine Hospital as a centerpiece. So these stories are pretty commonplace every year. There seemingly is a property, 2, 3, 4, that were highlighted as a most endangered property that there has now been a solution found. And that's part of the strategy with the endangered list, is to make sure that there is a viable solution for the property. Obviously, there are some properties throughout the state that there may not be a solution for. And we have to take that into account, because ultimately what we're trying to do is bring attention to those properties so that a potential solution that we think is there or local advocates have identified can come to fruition.
Well, one of the properties on this year's lists is in Chicago. It's a set of buildings that are near the Dirksen Federal Courthouse in downtown Chicago. And the federal judiciary up there says those buildings are a security hazard. They need to come down because apparently if you're up in the buildings, you can see into some of the judges' chambers or some of the jury rooms. And there have been threats to the judiciary in the past. The Landmarks put it on its list. There was a series of dueling op-eds in Chicago, an architect who says they should be preserved. Senator Dick Durbin just yesterday had an op-ed published in the Sun-Times calling for the removal of those buildings, the demolition of those buildings, in order to create a sort of security perimeter around the federal courthouse. Can you talk about another possibility for those skyscrapers other than the wrecking ball?
Sure. I mean, so the buildings we're talking about, the Century Consumers buildings, it's really unfortunate that they were in this position, right? Because back in 2017, there was a proposal from a real estate firm. They were working with the city to redevelop it. In fact, they had it was a $141 million redevelopment plan that would have taken these two structures and put them to use. And so, the concept, the proof of concept is there. It existed. But all of that was pulled back because of this expressed concern about safety, which, of course, we're talking about judiciary. We're talking about any federal properties. We always, as citizens, have to be cognizant of those concerns. But I think that, in talking about it internally and just talking about it with other advocates, the question is, where do you stop? If those two buildings see the wrecking ball at a cost of $52 million of taxpayer dollars, where does the perimeter stop? How do you determine whether or not, these buildings that could easily be reused into apartments or even office space for that matter, if there's a market for it, how do you justify pulling them down? Because if you pull them down, then there's new sight lines available to potential threats, as GSA has put it.
Yeah, the General Services Administration. What about, and I know you're the downstate expert for Landmarks, but the James R. Thompson Center has been something that I know has been the subject of historic preservation angst for quite a number of years now. There's finally a move on it from the state. Is Landmarks, can you say just in a general way, satisfied or dissatisfied with what the state is planning for the Thompson Center?
Sure. So, I mean, ultimately at our core, right, we're interested in saving places. We're interested in seeing buildings adaptively reused in some way. And our organization led the effort on that 3 years. It was on the most endangered list to highlight, that this is a property that, given its location and everything around it, and because of its uniqueness, it needs to be saved, it needs to be reused. And so to answer your question more directly, we're just happy that it's being saved. We're happy that it's being reused. The way in which the city or the way in which the state is doing that, we don't necessarily have an opinion on. We're just happy to see that the right decision was made, which is to adaptively reuse it rather than, go with a firm that may have wanted to demo it.
Yeah, another Block 37 just sitting vacant in downtown Chicago waiting for a plan. But that's not going to be what's happening because it is going to be preserved, as you said, largely. All right, we're going to continue this conversation. We need to take a break. We're speaking with Quinn Adamowski, who manages downstate advocacy for Landmarks Illinois. And when we come back, we'll be joined by two voices who are working to preserve the courthouse in Will County and an old Elks Lodge building in Rockford. If you want to join our conversation, the number is 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. Stay with us. This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about Landmarks Illinois' annual list of the most endangered historic buildings in Illinois. We're speaking with Quinn Adamowski, who manages downstate advocacy for the group. In a moment, we'll hear from two other voices who are working to preserve two of the properties on this year's list. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation. And we did have a call, doesn't want to go on air, but they wanted to know, Quinn, if the, is it the Breezy Tower in Danville is on the list. I think it was back in 2012. I don't know if that's something that's in your portfolio, Quinn.
It is, yeah. The Breezy Tower in Danville, significant structure, tallest building in Vermilion County. And yes, it was on the list back in 2012. It's on the National Register. It's one of those buildings that, you know, if you look at it, you just see the opportunity for housing. And so we have been in contact with the building owners. We've been in contact with developers and architects who are interested in seeing it adaptively reused. And I've had the opportunity to talk with the mayor of Danville, who is pretty firm and insistent that the building needs to be demolished.
Yeah, I'm looking at a headline in the Danville paper from a year and a half ago that says, Mayor says time has passed to save the tower.
Yeah, and there is no such thing as time has passed for a building. It is true that there are some safety concerns with the property. Unfortunately, some of the terracotta has been falling and they've had to, cordon off the road. And these are things that do happen. And the public safety concern is a real concern. But it's one that can be addressed. Oftentimes we just need municipalities to work with building owners to find an intermediate solution. And in this case, it would be netting the building to stop anything else from falling under the ground, you know, and providing the opportunity and the window for the owners to either figure out a capital stack to redevelop on their own or find another interested party that has the financial wherewithal to adaptively reuse it. So yes, Breezy Tower is definitely on my radar, definitely monitoring that. And we continue to advocate for its adaptive reuse.
All right, I want to bring now two more voices into the conversation. Nick Macris is advocate for the Will County Courthouse in Joliet, one of the endangered properties on this year's list. Nick, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with us. And Nick, you might be muted if you're on the Zoom there.
I'm sorry.
It happens.
I'm delighted to be here, Brian. Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming on. And we're also joined by Don Bissell, who's working to preserve Elks Lodge number 64 in Rockford. Don, thank you for making time to be with us today as well.
Thank you. We appreciate you inviting us.
So, Nick, I understand the Will County Courthouse. I myself had a traffic case adjudicated there many, many years ago. Sort of a controversial design from the start. Can you talk a little bit about the building for people who might not have seen it?
Sure, Brian, I'd be very happy to. The 1969 courthouse, which is right in the heart of downtown at Chicago and Jefferson Streets, is actually the fourth courthouse that resides in that vicinity, with the first one having been built in 1838. So the previous courthouse that was demolished to make room for this fourth courthouse was a very beloved civic structure that stood on the site, and that was originally built in 1887. And it was replaced by this new courthouse, which was built in 1969, ground broken in 65. Unapologetically, it's brutalist in architecture. It's been a controversial design since the day it opened. Many people think back of its predecessor and regret that that was demolished. But at any rate, our courthouse that was put into service in 1969 is a four-story, 140,000 square foot, poured-in-place concrete structure that, as we said, is very brutalist in design, very controversial in design. The county built a new courthouse and moved into it in 2020. It's one block west of, it's actually across the street west of the courthouse that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. That's a, they moved into that in 2020, 365,000 square feet in that high-rise courthouse. So,
yeah, if people want to, maybe they can picture this. It's got these sort of concrete rectangular look to it, and with a 45 degree angle sloping toward the ground. Brutalist is this idea of sort of, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but just, you know, sort of a box. It's not a lot of filigree. There's not, you know, gargoyles carved into the roof line or anything like that. This is just concrete and sky around it, right?
It's you're absolutely right, Brian. And it's in amongst the midst of several other buildings downtown that date to the late 19th and early 20th century. It's an eclectic mix of architectural styles in the immediate vicinity, including Beaux Arts, Renaissance Revival, Art Deco, and even Gothic Revival. So basically, we started the Courthouse Preservation Partnership several months ago. The county voted in 2019 to demolish this structure, but has not taken any further action toward making that a reality. The ultimate result with demolition would not only have a huge economic impact on the taxpayers that would be footing the bill for the demolition, but also from an environmental standpoint, there's just a heck of a lot of poured in place concrete and other materials that would result from such a demolition. Not to mention the fact that Joliet downtown would be left with yet another vacant lot, which was recently the case when the state's attorney's office was torn down across the street from our beloved Rialto Square Theater. That was intended to become a park, and as yet it has not. It's just an asphalt parking lot. So it's the position of this partnership that this building has great redevelopment potential that would enhance the efforts by the city and the county to revitalize downtown Joliet.
Don, let's talk about the Elks Lodge number 64. This is not a brutalist structure. What makes it special and worthy of preservation in your view?
Well, it was historically said to be the gateway to Rockford. It was built for, and the full name of the organization is the Benevolent and Protective Order of the Elks, Lodge number 64. And it was a social and meeting place for the organization. I'm not familiar with whether they made it available to other organizations at the time. That would be our vision now. But it was built around 1912. There was an addition. More space was needed, so an addition was put on it sometime later. But it dates back to the early part of Rockford.
Yeah, my dad was an Elk, not in Rockford. He was actually the exalted ruler of a different BPOE lodge back in the day. But I understand there's a ballroom and a bowling alley in there. What would you like to see it become?
Well, you know, we think an event space, meeting, you know, restaurant perhaps. We probably have enough office space now, and with the profile of the way offices are being used, probably have enough office space. But those that have looked at it say event space, and there's so much good in Rockford going on right now. We have 700 parking spaces within a couple hundred feet of the building. All of the other buildings in the area in the downtown, with the possible exception of two, have been either redeveloped or and are now in use. And so we'd like to see this happen to the Elks Club as well. And just as a couple of points on the curb, there's a brand new library. They just started pouring the concrete just as we speak, right across the street from it to the east, right across Wyman Street to the east. So lots of good things going on. And the historic Coronado Theater, 1927, is less than a block away.
Quinn, let me ask you. So I think with an older building, it's maybe a little easier for people to look at it and think preservation. But what about with Brutalist and Modernist and other structures like that? I know at some point we'll probably be talking about the Stratton office building, which I once worked in Springfield. We don't, not in today's conversation, but in the years ahead as the state moves to demolish that eventually. But how do you make the case for these buildings that people maybe don't necessarily think of as historic yet?
Sure, that's a great question. So, I mean, anything past 50 years, arguably, is in the range of historic, right? And as it relates to Brutalism, there's been two recent projects. Last year in Indianapolis, Hotel Indy opened up, another former Brutalist structure. They turned that into a boutique hotel. And then recently, just this April, in New Haven, Connecticut, the most energy efficient hotel in the country opened up in a Brutalist building. So, I mean, you're talking about buildings that are full of concrete, right, which is an insulated material. And you have these opportunities because of the way that they were laid out in a very utilitarian fashion to do a variety of different adaptive reuses. And hotels seem to be one that makes a whole lot of sense. So there is a market for these structures. And, you know, these two recent examples show that indeed there are developers out there who have an interest in taking on these buildings, because while there's challenges with them, obviously like any other buildings, maybe those challenges lend themselves to looking at these structures in a way that doesn't necessarily impact how do we get there, right? Like, we don't have to worry about these sorts of parameters. We do oftentimes have to worry about asbestos and things along those lines, but they offer just an endless amount of different reuse options. And so I think as time goes on, or people come around to respecting Brutalism, there will be these opportunities for buildings come offline and municipalities, organizations move on and create new structures.
Well, just a couple of minutes left in our conversation. Nick, what is your vision for the Will County Courthouse? So we heard examples of hotels, event spaces. This is next to the county jail, at least it was. I don't know. I assume that's still the case. What do you hope to see there?
Well, Brian, actually, this building housed the county jail in the basement. That now has been relocated south of the courthouse in a brand new complex.
Okay.
But our objective all along has been to encourage the county board to issue a request for proposal to developers so that we can thoroughly explore all the different opportunities that exist for that building. Like Quinn said, the construction of it lends itself to redevelopment. The structural system, it's not concrete walls, load-bearing walls inside and so forth. So we have considered a hotel, and Quinn mentioned the Hotel Indy, which is an amazing example of a similar building that became a boutique hotel. We have a number of wedding venue in the immediate area of the courthouse. So another boutique hotel example would be perfect there. Mm-hmm, we've looked mm-hmm. at rooftop gardens. We've come away with a lot of different ideas that would make this a real amenity for downtown Joliet as opposed to another vacant parking lot.
Perfect for that mid-century Mad Men themed wedding venue, perhaps. All right. I want to thank Nick Macris, who's an advocate for the Will County Courthouse in Joliet, Don Bissell, who is with Friends of Zayac, if I'm saying that right, working to preserve the Elks Lodge number 64 in Rockford, and Quinn Adamowski manages downstate advocacy for Landmarks Illinois. Quinn, Nick, Don, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
And that's all the time we have for our show today. The 21st is produced by Anna Casey, Aiden Choate, and Erica Scalise, who's also our engagement producer. Our interns are Owen Henderson, Zainab Qureshi, and Briel Skullark. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. I want to urge you to go to our website, 21stshow.org. While you're there, you can listen to our past shows. You can also find links to our podcasts. We're also on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, NPR One. Anywhere you get your podcasts, just search for The 21st, The21ST. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.